Welcome back. This is Hash Rate Up. We got Demand Pool on the show today. Augustine Krupka, a good friend of mine, is representing them today. We're going to talk pools, the landscape currently, and why Stratum V2 is important. Enjoy the show. All right, everybody. We're live with Augustine. Hello, Augustine. How are you doing?
Hey, Jesse. I'm doing well. Thanks for inviting me.
Nice. Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to quickly share my screen so we can look at Mempool together.
Awesome.
We're at 890746. And if we look at hash price, where are we? The pits of hell. $45.63 at 840 exahashes on the 7-day average. That's pain point. I recorded yesterday with Ethan. From Luxor, and last time I chatted to him was over a year ago, a little over a year ago, and we were at hash price. Where would you say a year ago? Where was hash price?
If not the same, even a bit higher. Actually, yes. No, actually, it was climbing a lot because the halving happened 11 months ago, April the 20th, 420. And before that, it was going super high. It was starting to climb. So I would say like somewhere around like 110 or something per petahash.
Hey, not bad. Oh. It's 100. Well done.
Oh, nice. All right.
Yeah, it's like $100 per petahash. And now we're sort of lingering in this pain zone after the Trump tariffs. Now we're at 81K Bitcoin price.
Yeah.
Down to 45. Man,
it's been tough.
It's not fun.
It's been tough.
And I think pools play an important role. So we are going to cover pools again a bit today. Want to cover a little bit of the basics. Most of the listeners will kind of know what pools are all about and why they are important and exist. But maybe before we get started, do you want to just give a very brief intro to yourself? For those listeners who don't know your face yet, never met you at a conference, and then we can get right into it.
That would be tough because in the conferences, I'm always running around and talking to everyone. So my name is Augustine. I'm half Spanish, half German. And I worked for a while, for like on and off around 3 years. So 1 year and a half, then went back to college and then another year for Northern Data as a Bitcoin mining analyst, business developer, internal consultant, a little bit of everything. And after that, once I graduated from college, from my economics bachelor, I ended up working for Demandpool with Alejandro La Torre, the first fully Stratum V2 pool out there.
Nice. You guys are growing. You just recently joined the team. I'm very happy to see that. Mm-hmm. And maybe to get started, Augustine, can you give the listeners from your perspective the lay of the land pool-wise? Where are we today? What are the sort of commonly used pools, FPPS versus other options? Why FPPS and all of that? Give me your lay of the land as it stands currently.
Yeah, 100%. I think the panorama is not good. Not if you care about Bitcoin mining, Bitcoin, or even as a miner, profits. Like, it's not good at all. Because basically, four different pools control 75% of the hash rate. And that's without taking into account proxies. If you take into account proxies, then those two pools basically control around 70% of the hash rate, 65% of the hash rate. That's Antpool and Foundry. They're both FPPS. And apart from that, we also
explain.
Have go ahead.
So sorry for interrupting you. Explain proxies.
Yeah. So proxies are basically same, but different, but still the same, as they would say in Southeast Asia, meaning it's a different pane of code of over the same thing. Like, same type of car, just give it a different pane of code. In this case, it would be something like, Antpool has a few proxies, those being other pools like EMCD. I'm not sure if EMCD is with Antpool, but as an example, they are very transparent about being a proxy. And that just means that EMCD doesn't take care of any of the infrastructure. They just have an API call coming from Antpool straight to their server. And real quick, they send it to the rest of the miners. They just put their tag, sometimes not even that, and that's it. They just have a nice website, a deal with Antpool, and a team of salespeople. That's the only thing that they have. So in reality, they're beholden to Antpool. And in reality, they're just Antpool. So because they're not built, well, we're getting now into the weeds of this, because at the end of the day, who builds the blocks? Nowadays, it's the pools. So ideally, the more people are building the blocks, the more decentralized Bitcoin mining is, because miners are not really miners. They're just hash rate providers. They're mercenaries to paying, offering their services to their compute to the highest bidder or to the best bidder, because sometimes they're not even directing their hash rate to the highest bidder, but that's a different story. Right now, these proxy pools, they're like a mirage. They make you feel like there's more decentralization than what there actually is, because you look at Antpool and you say, oh, they only have like 25% of the hash rate. But then you see all of the pools that they control, all of these other companies that seem to be independent but truly aren't. And you realize that Foundry has 35% and Antpool and Friends, as we're calling them lately, they also have like 35 to 45% of the hash of the remaining hash rate. So, yeah, that's a troublesome.
So just to add some color here, I mean, I feel like it's a natural occurrence that this exists, simply because of the risk with luck, right? A favorite pool of mine that I like to highlight is Wilson Pool. Have you heard of Wilson Pool before?
Yeah. They're from America, yeah. Right?
So I love what they're doing, because they basically said, okay, listen, doing a pool is not very hard, and we're just gonna go to SBI Crypto, which is a company that runs a primary pool, right? So they're running their own node, basically connected to the Bitcoin blockchain directly. They're not a proxy. And they just said, we're going to build a very basic interface, and we're just going to pass on the cost that we get, right? Because if you start your own pool, you have some idea or whatever, and we're going to get into this with regards to demand as well. If your hash rate is not high enough right now, you run the risk of not being able to pay your miners out, because they are entitled to FPPS rewards no matter what, right? But if you don't find a block, you've got nothing to pay out. You've got zero revenue. And to solve that issue, what are you going to do? You're just going to send your hash rate onto the next bigger pool to offload that risk and pay that price. And then basically at that point, you're just making money on the spread between the pool fee that you get versus what you're charging, right? And I think it's a natural occurrence, but I agree with you. It's led to a point where so much of the hash rate is concentrated in so few hands, simply because everybody sort of sells it upstream to a pool that is large enough. And I do feel like that's a problem. And that's why I think developments like Demand and Ocean are super important.
Yeah, if I may add to that, I think it's a bit more complex, and it's part of the, let's say, of the misinformation. I don't like to use that word, but in reality, it's kind of what it is. It's the propaganda coming from big pools on how history has evolved. FPPS wasn't always around. And FPPS is just one of the two vectors or one of the two prongs of centralization in Bitcoin mining. The first one being technology. In that one, it was, well, only obvious after the block size wars that there was a problem. Before that, nobody was even technical enough to really think about that. And even if someone was technical enough, it was just like, we should have miners have the power to create blocks again, right, guys? And nobody would care. But after 2018, that's when we see Matt Corallo, one of the longest standing core developers, Bitcoin core developers, come out with BetterHash as a response to what we saw with ASIC Boost and the block size wars, where we saw that, oh, wow, actually this centralization vector, it's very serious. And the funny thing is, this centralization vector, technological, appeared in the same way as the economical centralization vector, which is FPPS. 2011, just Slush, the creator of the first pool, realized that, hey, we need to actually like get something better than get block template. So let's create it. But of course, he wasn't, let's say, a super engineer of like Bitcoin mining. Bitcoin mining hadn't existed for 15 years, right? It was only around for like 2 years at most. So he just created something that was good enough. And at that point, it was good enough. That's why it started to have network effects. Everyone started adopting it, and that's how it spread. But we should have, like, at that point, hash rate was around 1 to 5 terahash. I have more sitting on my living room on my few bit axes than the entire network back then, right? So it's kind of weird that we're still using the same protocol for communication 800 exahash later, even 50 exahash later. That's what I think we had more or less around 2017-18. So, but that just happened by mistake. He just made a choice. Okay, where do I put each thing? Okay, who's going to create the block templates? Let's have it on the pool side. Cause that just makes it easier and, you know, less troublesome. Okay, let's do it. Everyone agreed. We went on with life. Nobody cared. It worked until 2018. Oh, wow. Now, 7 years later, network effects, everyone's using it. Now it's a problem. And the same happened around that time as we were realizing that that was a centralization vector with FPPS. FPPS appeared around 2017. There's a story behind that. Perhaps we can get into it later. And at that point, it just looked like a better deal for miners, right? Who wouldn't want to get paid regardless of the luck of the pool, right? Hey, no risk for the miner. They already have enough risk with like the energy and the getting the machines and financing. All right, you know what? If you can get one off your back, perfect. But we didn't realize it until recently, like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, that hey, Antpool and friends, why is that? Everyone, what? All of these Coinbase addresses are from different pools are collecting into the same address belonging to some, I don't remember the name, but it was some Chinese liquidity provider or something. And it's like, oh, that's not very decentralized. And then we keep looking into it. We see now, thanks to Boerst and B10C, that some pools, they actually even share stratum jobs, meaning they're getting their jobs from the same pool. That's how we realized, oh, wow. Proxies are much more important and prevalent in the network than we thought before. So that's how we get to the current state. And part of the problem is FPPS. So FPPS is not just like the let's say, the status quo naturally. It kind of was like taken there by pools and taken there by Stratum V1 and how it works. Yeah, that's a bit of a history lesson on how we arrived
here. Yeah, no, I love those. You can get into what you wanted to get into later now as well. I think also if you look at FPPS, I think it's, again, a natural occurrence because Bitcoin mining, as you described, now you've got a few terahash sitting in your living room. I've got an S9 sitting idle here in my room waiting for winter to heat my feet again. BitX nice. Running also, like, hash rate is at 840 exahash. A year ago, it was at 550 or something, right? So the network has nearly doubled in a year, again, from a basis of 500 exahash, which is massive. And of course, as the industry sort of professionalizes more, there is now, you know, shareholders, there's big public companies, there's revenue certainty. Now FPPS is necessary to hash rate growth also. Because if you want to grow and have investors, you know, it does help if you have revenue that you can forecast. Whenever I model, you know, hash price, okay, I'm going to get this hash price for my petahashes or whatever. Now I can, you know, have different scenarios. What is hash price going to be? All of that is based off of FPPS. And it only really goes away. Like this variance thing that FPPS solves only really goes away if your pool has enough hash rate. But to attract the hash rate in the first place, you need FPPS. So it's a bit of a hen and egg issue, right?
Yes and no. I actually think we are now past the peak, you know, like with peak oil. You know, at some point we're going to be past peak oil. And then, well, I've been saying that for like the past 30 years, I think, right? And apparently this is the year, or last year was the year. But truly with FPPS, that's what's going to happen. And that's because FPPS, what happened in 2017-18 when the pools changed PPLNS to FPPS slowly but surely. And I think the last pools to fall were around 2023 with Brains after their whole riot thing. But Brains wasn't using PPLNS. They were using Score. It was known that it was a bad payment method. So they should have changed before. But anyway, I digress. What basically happened when they switched from PPLNS to FPPS is basically what happened at the beginning of the Indiana Jones movie. You got the golden statue and Indiana Jones takes it and puts sand. That's because FPPS is not a payment method. PPLNS is a payment method. Pools are just made so that miners, it's kind of like syndicate. Miners get together and they help each other out in the bad times, so to speak. And they do this by pooling their hash rate. This way, you know, that in total, their variance or the probability of finding a block per day goes up. So therefore, they end up finding more blocks per day, but they get a lower reward per day. So instead of getting one reward every 12 months and a very big reward, you divide that reward by 12 and get one every month, something like that. And the only thing that a pool is supposed to do is manage payments. Manage, you know, how these guys get together and then the distribution. But FPPS is not a distribution mechanism. It's not a payment mechanism. It's an insurance policy. You're being insured against bad luck. It sounds great. But the problem with insurance policies is that they're expensive. And why are they expensive? Because insurances need a lot of capital. Everyone knows this. A PPLNS pool, we don't need capital. Not really. Only to like kickstart the pool. And then afterwards, everything's already funded. Because we only distribute payments once we have gotten a block. But with FPPS, you need to have the reserves, be it in credit or be it in capital, to withstand a luck of bad streak. Bad streak luck, I think that's the correct way to say it. So and what's the problem with that? And actually, Manny Rosenfeld's 2011 paper, everyone should read that one. It's a bit dense, but like it's a magnum opus on Bitcoin mining pools. He has a formula to calculate if you want a certain percentage of your FPPS pool going bankrupt. Like, oh, I want a 1% chance that my pool goes bankrupt. My FPPS pool goes bankrupt. Okay, how much reserves do you need to have for how many exahash? So if you have, I don't know, like Foundry, you have 35%. That means you have like 280 or something exahash. Okay, how many Bitcoins do you need to have in order to not go, to have a lower than 1% chance of going bankrupt? And you look at the number and it's crazy. We were talking with the NiceHash guys and they were saying something like, for every one exahash, multiply the block subsidy by 100. So now it will be something like 300 Bitcoins. For every exahash you have in FPPS, if you want a 1% chance of going bankrupt, that was kind of like the rule of thumb. Of course, it's not precise, but more or less. So tell me how much Bitcoin they need to have on reserve if you have 280 exahash, right? And then tell me what's the cost of that. That's why most of the miners, right? Well, most of the miners, every miner that's mining with Foundry this month has gotten a fee increase. Because if you have to get even a 4%, 3% return on, 200,000 Bitcoins, that's not going to be cheap. That's not going to be cheap. Someone has to pay for that. And the pool, they either bring the cost, like they pass the cost on to the miner, or they go bankrupt as they eat up their own capital. So there's no way around it. And that's the problem FPPS. And that's why I say that we're past peak. Because there's the second part. That's just, give me a second. I'm finishing with this one. Because that's just the first part. Because right now you'd say, okay, yeah, but they're very big. They got good capital, all of that. Okay, yeah. But the problem with that is that an insurance policy, the higher the volatility or the higher the variance, the more expensive it gets. Because it gets more volatile. You need more reserves to like insure against that. And what's happening with Bitcoin mining? Oops, every 4 years we get a halving. And with the halving, the stable part of the payout, the Coinbase reward, the block subsidy, goes down. It literally halves. So as time goes on, we're going to be relying more and more on the volatility of fees to sustain our operations. And the problem with that is that they're very volatile. So that means that their costs, their capital costs, they will increase exponentially. They will go over 9,000 if you're a Dragon Ball Z fan, you know? So
have we seen that?
If it's not dead yet, it's going to be dead in the next 20 years.
Hashrate Up is sponsored by solomining.de, the place to buy open source home and solo mining devices like the BitX. With about 20 watts of usage, these solo mining devices are perfect to play the lottery from home or from the office. Get 5% off with the code Hashrate Up. Thanks to the legends at solomining.de for sponsoring the content. Have we seen pools go bankrupt before? What does that look like?
Yeah.
Hashrate just goes elsewhere immediately, right? Secondary pool gets activated.
The famous one was in 2014, ghash.io. They were the biggest pool back then. They were approaching the 51% magic number. They had, I think it was around 45%, and steadily increasing until the community started like ringing the bells, ringing the alarm. And I think it was like they also were very like forthcoming, and they asked the miners, some of the miners, to leave their pool. So different times, which pool would do that today, right? They did it to protect the Bitcoin network. And yeah, I think, what was it? I think it was like 2 months they had lost half of their hash rate, and 2 years later they went bankrupt. Like they disappeared. And we have seen a few. I know Poolin also like effectively went bankrupt. But to be honest, I haven't looked into it. I don't know how that looks
Okay,
like.
I mean, one other thing that I wanted to note was FPPS doesn't equal FPPS, right? When everybody talks about hash price, they mostly talk about the hash price index that Luxa puts out, and I know that they calculate their FPPS payout on their pool by going backwards 144 blocks. But the issue is, you don't know what the next block's payout will be; you can only guess, right? And I understand there's sort of a cutoff at the upper limit and a cutoff at the lower limit, where now miners don't make all of the fees and all of that. So to talk to me about that a little bit, and how that relates to fee payouts. And then I think we should get into demand.
No, 100%. It's funny that you asked me this today, because exactly today I spent half of my day going down one of the rabbit holes. Because what we've discovered is that FPPS, right? I've already explained why it has these high costs, and it's somehow miners have to pay them, because that's the only revenue stream for pools. So the question is, okay, but they claim to have 0.4, 0.5, 1% fees, right? Depending on how big you are. The bigger you are, the smaller the fee you get. So where's the trick? They say that I'm getting 0.4%. You're saying I should be getting more, but I don't see it. Well, it's like you arrive in Cairo, in Egypt, to the airport. You have US dollars, you have euros. You want to spend them, but you know you're not going to be able to. So you, oh, awesome. I just arrived in the airport. 0% exchange fee. Dope. I'll go exchange my money there. You give them 100 euros or $100 worth, and you get back $80 worth of lira. I don't know what the currency is in Cairo, but you get $8. You're like, whoa, where's the 0%? And they're like, oh, there was a spread, the markets. And you're like, whoa, that's my bank would have given me like 4% spread or something. This is outrageous. Well, that's what we're seeing here. We're seeing that pools, because they cannot provide, like, because they have these high costs, they need to somehow increase the fees. But of course, increasing the fees is not competitive. So they somehow need to get paid. And that's why FPPS became the perfect excuse to start muddying the waters, turn FPPS into like a black box, just to, hey, trust me, bro, you don't need to look into this. Hey, don't worry, man. Like, you're good. You're getting what you deserve, right? Here's a contract. Look at the fancy contract. And so they started to use the fact that FPPS was like starting to be accepted by all the miners to, first of all, every pool get their own different version of FPPS. So therefore, when we're talking about FPPS, it's not a concrete thing. We're actually just talking about, hey, do you have a car? Okay, they can say, yes, we use car. In our company, we use car. Okay, but what does it mean? Do you drive like a Mercedes to work, or do you use like a Volkswagen, or do you use a Maserati? Like, they're different cars. Or you're driving a truck, right? Someone could say that's also a car, right? But it's not the same. So they're using that to like muddy the water. So you cannot even compare to equal FPPS, equal, I make air quotes, FPPS formulas, because, oh no, they actually use the network difficulty. Oh no, they use the 144 blocks. Oh, but they use time. Oh, but they use that. Oh, but they have the 10 most valuable transactions over the past term, and also the 10 least. Or no, we actually don't take into account the, right? How can you compare this? It's not apples with apples. It's apples with oranges and bananas and pears and whatever you want. So that money is
Explain,
more the water. Yeah, go ahead.
Augustine, explain to the listeners again, because I don't understand the analogy there, right? So you're saying, yeah, the fee is one mechanism to make money, the other bigger mechanism to cover that large capital cost that you discussed, is to not pay out what the market says, or what is that spread in Bitcoin mining terms?
So I would we call it a hidden fee or a hidden spread, meaning we are gonna charge you, we're gonna modify things so that we are getting paid without you noticing. in a sense, it's like with Coinbase or Binance, right? They claim very low fees, but everyone knows that they make money on every buy and sell, right? They have the spread on the market, and that's just their way to like make money constantly. They're printing money all the time, regardless if price is going up or price is going down. What matters to them is that volume is up. Many people are buying and selling, right? And that's the spread, right? Hidden. You don't look at it. You don't see it. You think, oh, I got the best price. Oh, I bought the dip. Yeah, but they still won, right? So it's that hidden spread. And the question is, okay, how do they hide it? Where do they hide it? And they hide it first in the fact that the FPPS formula is different for every pool. So it's hard to compare between them and see, oh yeah, look, that they're skimming here a bit, right? Or that they'll just nowadays they'll just say, oh no, we're not skimming. We're just using a different small variation. Because look, we use this and that and this. We had this modification, right?
Okay, but
So,
I mean, so
yeah.
to, but I mean, they can only make money if the actual payout from the hash rate is higher than what they're paying out. And,
Exactly.
you know, the FPPS formula that a pool uses should be clearly communicated, right? So if
That's
it
the funny thing.
is, doesn't they, yeah, if you clearly communicate the FPPS formula you are using, right, everybody can benchmark their payouts against that. And then the pool really only makes money if the actual payouts from the hash rate that they receive is higher than what their FPPS formula says it is, correct?
Yeah, but the thing is with Bitcoin is that statistics doesn't lie, math doesn't lie, right? You need to have the percentage somewhere, and you need to make it somehow. And also, like, if you have those capital reserves that you need for FPPS, because they're still going on, right? Foundry has been going on for 3 years, and they've had a few streaks of bad luck, right? Days where they only got one block, even though they should have gotten 7, 8, 9, 10, 20, right? So, but they still had to pay out 20 blocks worth of Bitcoin, right? But they only got one. So where's that money coming from, right? Well, that's the cost again, right? So like, I mean, that's kind of the gist of the thing. They have these costs, they need to pay them somehow. They communicate the formula clearly, but in a very complicated manner, and they add these like weird truncations, these weird modifications that make it harder for anyone to independently check, right? Because then they can always say, ah, well, you just used the wrong data. Or, oh, well, you didn't add this little piece of whatever. Or, oh, well, the worst case, they'll just say, oh, well, that was our bad. Don't worry. Here's the part that you thought was necessary, right? I've never
Do
heard that happen. So I don't know if that's even possible.
the pools actually communicate their FPPS payout methods and calculations? Do all of them do that or not really?
We haven't checked all of them, but like a funny thing, I was talking to I don't want to say names, so I'm not going to say them, but let's say a certain pool, they used to openly share their formula. They don't anymore. It's like a friend of mine, he used to work there, and he was like, what? I was looking for the formula like yesterday and I couldn't find it. That's weird. We used to have it in this place, you know, very clearly communicated, you know, and under FAQ, frequently asked questions. What's the formula? Here it is. And it's nowhere to be seen. Right? Foundry still provides theirs, but it's still quite complicated. And even in their formula, they're already telling you how they're playing you. The problem is you need to do the math to see how much they're skimming, what's the hidden fee. So we can get into a few of the ways that they do it. Because we recently actually discovered a new one. And that's the fact that in most FPPS formulas, they either pay out the network difficulty or 144 blocks. That's the expected amount per day. But if you look at the hash rate, or if you look at the average blocks per day in the past year, 2 years, 5 years, doesn't matter. Because hash rate has always been increasing, blocks have on average arrived at 9.40 something seconds, 9 minutes, 40 something seconds. That means that per day we're getting at least 146 to even 150 blocks. But they're still paying you on 144. So who's pocketing those extra 2 to 5 to 6 blocks, right? Who's getting them?
Yeah,
And then
no, that's actually clever because over what you're saying, Augustine, is just for the listener, right?
yeah.
Just to make sure everybody's with us here. On average, hash rate has grown from inception to today, which means if hash rate constantly grows, block times are less than 10 minutes, therefore more blocks per day. And you're saying there's a difference between the 144, 10 minutes, 24 hours, and the actual blocks. So that's, yeah, exactly. That's interesting.
Exactly. Because when hash rate grows, that means that blocks are arriving faster, and that's when the difficulty adjusts upwards. And that's what difficulty has been doing all the time, right? So we know for a fact that that's what's been happening. And actually, today I was running a few numbers, and I took just a random 90-day set, like 90 days, and I calculated the difference between like the actual blocks per day and the expected ones, right? And I accumulated it, the difference, and over a time of 90 days, the pools, all of them, like the entire network, had pocketed around $40 million on their side. So had it been PPLNS, had the whole network been PPLNS, miners would, after those 90 days, be $40 million richer.
Mm.
Right?
Okay, that's fair enough.
Right? And that's just one. I think one part.
Yeah, no, but I mean, you can multiply it and understand how big the issue might be. I want to talk about demand. That's what you're here for.
Yeah. Thank you.
With all of this as a basis and setting the landscape, how does Stratum V2 solve this? How does demand approach this? What problem are you guys solving? Are you using FPPS? Are you using PPLNS? What describe demand and how we solve these issues?
Yeah. So Stratum V2 was supposed to be the solution to all of this. But as we were deploying Stratum V2, we realized that the problem with Bitcoin pooled mining, it's not just a technological problem, what I described first, right? Hey, who builds the block templates? It had also become an economic, a financial problem. Hey, FPPS is a centralization force. Because as you said, small miners like Wilson Mining, they cannot just spin up their own pool because they would need to have a certain amount of reserves. Even for Wilson Mining, even if they had, let's say, their 200 petahash, they would still need to have, let's say, a couple Bitcoin, 20, 30 Bitcoin. Hey, that's an amount, right? They could be deploying that into miners and getting, right, a return. So there's two vectors of centralization. The first one is tackled by Stratum V2. We are the first fully Stratum V2 pool. And we're very proud of that. Our CTO, he is the lead developer of Stratum V2, Filippo Merli. With a Spiral grant, he's the one who started SRI, Stratum Reference Implementation, back in January of 2021. Since then, he's had help from, I think, almost 50 or 55 open source developers from all over the world, from all over the Bitcoin community. So that's also why we feel so confident using Stratum V2, because it's been proven, it has had hundreds of eyes on it. So that's the first part. But the second part, that's the financial part. We're not doing FPPS, not at all. We want to be a transparent, forthcoming a pool. Sometimes that scares a little bit people. Like a few of the miners we were speaking to, they're like, whoa, that's, you're telling me too much complexity. Like, bring it down. I just want to know how much I'm getting paid, right? Or like, yeah, well, we're just telling you the truth. But at the end of the day, we're going to give you a clean package that you can just use, demand pool, right? Without all of the complexity, we take care of that. And the second vector being PPLNS, but not just PPLNS by itself, because PPLNS is also not going to hold its own when the block subsidy goes down and fees become more important, especially if we use Stratum V2 and we allow each miner to build their own block templates. Because different miners, when they build their own block templates, will, for any given reason, create different value, so different fee value blocks. So the miners that don't want to mine ordinals or whatever is next, or runes, they will potentially have lower fees on their block. Therefore, it would be unjust if, hey, I work 40%, you work 60%, but we split it 50-50, right? Nobody likes that. Anyone who's done that understands that that's communism, and communism didn't work. So we're using Slice, which is an advanced method of PPLNS. In technical terms, is PPLNS plus job declarator. Job declarator being a component of Stratum V2, the one that manages the communication between the miner and the pool. So between these two, that's how we manage to start the decentralization of Bitcoin mining and take a step in the right direction and not keep taking steps into the wrong direction that we have been taking as a whole in this industry so far. So that would be kind of a gist what we're doing at Demand Pool.
Can you, for the listener again, and myself also, to summarize, spend a minute, Augustin, and explain the main benefits of Stratum V2, please.
Yeah, 100%, happily. First of all, it is specified, meaning it is clear what does what. Like, a chair is a chair, you sit in it. It should be clear. You don't use it as a hammer. Because the problem with Stratum V1 is that because it was made kind of in a hurry, right, it's not really well specified, and different pools use it different ways. It would be almost like if soccer, in some countries you play with the hands and in others you can only play with the knees and the others you play with the feet, right? Oh, but it's always called soccer, right? That's not a protocol. That's not global, right? So what Stratum V2 does is it sits down and it says, hey, what is what? And why are we using these things? Where's the fat? Where can we trim it? And by doing that exercise, we were able to codify a good protocol. The question is, okay, what does this protocol do? The main advantage is, instead of being JSON, instead of being like emails or WhatsApps being sent back and forth in unencrypted form, so anyone can intercept them, anyone can steal them from you, they're now in binary and they're encrypted. And there's they use the noise protocol, there's handshakes, you know, Diffie-Hellman and all of that. Like, it's secure. Like, when you're talking to the pool, both sides know who they're talking to and nobody can intervene. Those are the two main, like, let's say, communication side things. Then there's also the fact that Stratum V2 is flexible. So in that sense, it's versatile because it allows you to just use it as if it was Stratum V1, but with the advantages of, hey, it's encrypted out of the box and it's a binary, so much more efficient. These two things by themselves, they allow you to already have zero stale shares, basically. Nowadays, it's normal to get between 1% and 3% stale shares. That's the problem with Stratum V1. Stratum V2, our tests so far, we've seen basically no stale shares. But that's not the star of the show. The star of the show is the fact that thanks to quite a bit of work, we've been able to enable miners to build their own blocks. So now the pool is once again just a payment distributor. And it's the miner who's doing the mining. So that's what Stratum V2 does. Encrypted,
explain
binary, and block template generation for the miner.
Explain stale shares. Explain shares, first of all, briefly, and explain what a stale share is.
Yeah. So shares is the way, is the accounting method for the pools to know how much each miner or each client deserves. It's in all of the names. FPPS means full pay per share. PPLNS means pay per last N, N being a number, a random number, whichever is chosen, shares. And these shares, you submit them, and they can also be called weak blocks because in a way what they are is it's a almost correct block. It just doesn't have enough zeros. But you still submit it to the network, to the pool, so the pool can say, okay, this guy's working. And therefore, he deserves a certain part. Then stale shares, those weak blocks, those proofs of work, because they are in reality proofs that you're doing work to the pool, right? That arrive late or that somehow the pool deems invalid. Usually the problem is latency or that they arrive late. Because the communicate between the pool communicating to you what you have to work on, you starting to work on, and then sending it back because of Stratum V1 and its inefficiencies, you get between that 1% to 3% of basically lost revenue, stale shares. That's work. Those are receipts that are not being paid, so to speak.
This episode is sponsored by Hashbranch, the easiest way to mine Bitcoin in the US. Sourcing hardware and rack space usually is a mess. Bad deal structures, misaligned incentives, and no visibility after deployment. I have placed tens of thousands of ASICs in partnership with Hashbranch. What I like most is that they cut through the noise. Fair pricing, aligned terms, and access to hosting that actually works. Use code HASHRATEUP100, visit hashbranch.com today to get $100 off of each miner that you order. Okay, so I mean, I always explain it in a way that pools need shares instead of hash rate because they cannot compute valid blocks from invalid blocks oh, they can't simply receive all of the guesses that the miner does, right?
Oh, no. I was with Scott in Nashville last year for the Bitcoin conference. We did the math real quick, and the non space is 2 elevated to 32. That's 4 billion, give or take, more or less. And a BitAx does 1 trillion hashes per second. Like 1 trillion guesses, 1 trillion tries per second. Yeah. Just a bit. Okay.
So it would be way too much computing power required on that end to go through all of that data. So this is why you use weak shares, where you set a lower difficulty, and only if that difficulty is reached by a block that your miner is producing, then that counts as work, right?
Exactly.
So that you get a payout. Okay.
And something very important, because that we have seen that it, like people, if you have a BitAx or if you're a miner, you'll see, oh, what's your best share? Oh, I got a 2 billion share or something like that, or 900 million or 20 million, right? But from the pool's perspective, regardless of what the difficulty of your share is, we will count it at the lower bound, in the sense of at the threshold that we gave you. So if you submit 100 billion share, it's not going to count that much. It's just going to count like 1,001. And this makes sense when you think about the case of a BitAx or a miner, any miner, finding a block. If you find a block, that means you created a share with more than 113 trillion difficulty right now. The last BitAx share was actually like 700 trillion. And in our case, in demand pool, our look back window is 8 times the network difficulty, which effectively means that you're going to be paid 8 times. Like any share that you provide to the pool is going to get 8 small payments before it like reaches its full value, almost like a discounted cash flows model, so to speak. And if suddenly that miner got the correct block with 700 trillion difficulty, he would occupy 7/8 of the, let's say, of our look back window, therefore getting 7/8 of all of the payments over the past, well, over the next 8 blocks, right? Mm. So he would be getting a disproportionate amount, and that's not what we want. Because we don't care who finds the right block, right? In a pool, yeah, you can, you know, we'll send you some stickers. I don't know. We're still thinking about that, right? But you're not going to get the entire reward. That's not a pool. If you want that, do solo mining. We encourage it. Mm. So that's what we only think from the
lower. Okay, I want to... Understood. I want to take the last portion of this to understand how you guys go about growth. I mean, you do BD at Demand Pool. That's your responsibility, from my understanding. You guys are starting at 0 terahash, 0 petahash. How are you guys going about attracting hash rate? What's the strategy to grow and start competing with the big FPPS boys?
Yeah. The main thing, and that's basically us having tied our left or right hand behind our back for this fight, is the fact that we are a PPLNS pool and not a proxy FPPS. Starting a proxy FPPS is very easy. Like actually recently we saw Bitcoin Squared or something like that, a pool with 7 exahashes just appeared out of nowhere and they just started mining. And we're all like, whoa, what happened here? Because we know how hard it has been for us to start working. Day later, we discover it's just a proxy. That's it. Okay. In that case, you don't need to have neither the capital requirements nor the infrastructure nor anything like that. You just call a few friends of yours, say, hey, switch it to here. It's going to be the same as before. You don't even need to convince them because it's the same thing. Look, you can mine for Antpool or you can mine for friend of Antpool, but it's still Antpool.
Understand.
So same, same, but different. But in our case, we're a PPLNS pool. And that's where having a network and a good connection, good connections with the miners is not even important. It's like above that. It's, you cannot overstate it. It's mission critical. Like you are not able to launch a pool, a PPLNS pool, if you don't have the contacts. Because otherwise you're going to get started and what are you going to get? 500 petahash? You're going to be finding a block every once a month, right? Nobody's going to want to join that when they can be getting paid every day with FPPS, right? Because that's the other thing. PPLNS starts acting like FPPS once you cross the 1% of the total network hash rate. So the moment you're at around nowadays 7 to 8% of the hash, exahash, 7 to 8 exahash in your PPLNS pool, you start acting as an FPPS pool minus all of the hidden fees and all of the costs. So
understand.
The goal is to get started with a lot of hash rate. We've learned it from different pool that launched recently, Ocean, right? They started with just a bit in a hurry, not enough hash rate. And yeah, we learned from mistakes of others. So our trick has been having Alejandro. For those that don't know, Alejandro Latorre is the CEO and co-founder of Demand Pool with our co-founder and CTO, Filippo Merli. And he is the key to this, basically. He has been working in the industry since 2015, more or less. He actually created two different number one pools. So BTC.com, he's the one who brought BTC.com into number one back in 2018. And then when he left, he joined Poolin. This is funny because you can actually see the Alejandro effect. When Alejandro left BTC.com and joined Poolin, you can see how BTC.com starts dropping. And very quickly, Poolin starts rising. And I think it was like a year later, Poolin was number one. So that's very important. That's crucial. And he was able to reach into his network, contact some of his friends in higher positions and good positions, and managed to get a sizable amount of hash rate pledged for starters. So the idea is to start already running, you know.
Okay, so basically you're saying, look, we're the first Stratum V2 pool. There's benefits here. Use them. You got Alejandro with a strong network. Are you guys reducing pool fees to zero to attract new hash rate, then ramping it back up so that you get people invested and interested? What are you doing? Conferences? Are you sponsoring stuff? I mean, you've just been raising money as well, I believe. Yeah. Where's that money going? Give us a bit of context there briefly.
Alejandro and Filippo, they raised a round with TVP, Trammell. I think it was like 6-7 months ago, around October, end of last year. That money is going into maintaining the team for now and into sending us into conferences. The main way we're promoting the pool demand is by, first of all, having a promotion, 0% fee for 2 months for anyone who joins up in the waitlist. By the way, the website is dmnd.work, or demands, but like without the vowels, .work. And people can sign up there to the waitlist, and then we're going to give them a 0% fee, a true 0% fee, right? Like no hidden strings, no hidden fees, right? No hidden spreads, let's call them that. So that's the main part. And then also we're offering a founding miners deal for 2 years. So miners that join us early, they can actually lock in, you know, a great deal. We're making sure that it's going to be awesome. And yeah, it's kind of like, hey, you help me at the beginning, I'll help you for the next 2 years. You know, not very symmetrical, but we want to do it. We want to get the first Stratum, fully Stratum V2 pool out there. And, you know, we don't want it to be like, oh, it fails. And then, oh, no, don't use Stratum V2. Oh, Stratum V2. No. If we do it right, then we know that we're going to start, you know, like the floodgates are going to be open. Then people are going to start using Stratum V2. Other pools who want to join also deploy their own Stratum V2. And then hopefully by the end of the decade, we'll have most, if not all, blocks being mined by their own miners with their own nodes, with their own ASICs. That would be ideal. So we're doing those two main things, then also going to conferences and reaching out to all of the miners. And yeah, if miners want to join up, if they want to hear more about this sweet 0% fee, plus also founding miners deal, they can hit us up either at the website. We have a wait list and a contact form, so you can sign up into any of those. Or they can hit me up at augustin.krupka. Well, that's a bit complicated. We can put it on the show notes. My last name is funny. Augustin.krupka at demand.work. So yeah, that will
cool,
be
like
the place. So that's how we're doing it. Going to conferences and offering a sweet deal apart from already having a lot of pledged hash rate. Because that's also the other thing. Lots of miners are very reticent to join a pool. Even if they have enough hash rate to do solo mining and hit a block a day, they still want to feel that safety of, hey, I'm not alone. You know, I'm not standing by myself. So that's why it was key, was crucial that we had Alejandro Latorre and his network of contacts helping us get started.
We'll put everything in the show notes, Augustin. Tell people also where to find you personally on the socials. And I'll give you the last word.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. It's not as if I've been talking the whole time. but basically, I'm going to dox myself a bit here. I have a pseudonym, Twitter pseudonym. It's General Kenobi. So that's me. You can find me in Telegram at Kenobi Nakamoto, or in Twitter at Kenobi General 5. Otherwise, apart from that, I'm on LinkedIn under my real name, and I already set my email, and you can find us on the website. Also on Twitter, demand is also on Twitter, demand pool, demand underscore pool. And yeah, otherwise, Stratomy 2. You should, like, people should follow the Stratomy 2 team. Check out the website, it's great. And also the Open Source Miners United group. That's where the BitX came from. That's the 256 Foundation, the Ember One, Hybrid Pool, all of these awesome new things in the wave of decentralization that we're feeling. I don't know. I really like these things. So I'm going to shut up now, because otherwise I could speak for another hour about this. But yeah, go check them out as well. So check us out, but also them.
Guys, go check out Demand Pool. Check out Augustin. Thank you very much for your time, sir. All the best. I'll leave everything in the show notes. Have a good one. Cheers.